Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul, Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen talk radio show. My guest for this morning is Dr. Jill Greenbaum. She is a nationally known coach who supports teens in facing the daunting college search and selection process. Jill has helped thousands of students move from anxious and overwhelmed to confident and enthusiastic. Dr. Greenbaum and I will be discussing about her coaching program, Choosing the College That's Right for You. Good morning, Jill. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I'm just great, Johnny. Thank you so much for having me on.
It's wonderful to have you on the air with me this morning, and I am looking forward to your insights on how teens and their parents can jumpstart their college search. Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
All right, Johnny. In brief, I grew up in New York, and I am an only child, and I completely loved that experience. I was fortunate enough to travel all over the world with my parents. So I have been from Australia to the Philippines to France to Great Britain. I'm also a scuba diver, so I've done a lot of scuba diving. I started when I was 12, so that's a number of years right now. And I traveled also as an exchange student. So in high school, I was curious and lived in France for half a year with a family where I had four brothers and a sister. So that was a very different experience and very wonderful. Mm-hmm. And then I went to college at Clark University in Worcester, Massachusetts. And I had a vision for what I wanted to do in college. I wanted to study child psychology. And so I chose Clark as the program for me. And in fact, I got there. I liked it. And yet I also wanted more. So I turned towards education. And this is kind of related to the work that I do. I widened my opportunities, and I graduated with a degree both in psychology and in education and became a teacher for a number of years.
Very interesting. Why is it choosing the place you want to go to college to such a daunting undertaking?
I think it's such a daunting undertaking because, for several different reasons, actually. I think it's a very big process. I think there are many steps involved, some of which students and families can have some control over when they begin the process, how they engage in it, how they think through their partnership during that process. But there are some elements that are not under control, such as the testing, filling out the application, deadlines, financial aid. And quite honestly, you know as well as I do, Johnny, that there's just a lot in the media. There's a lot of mania about this college search process. And I think that stirs people up and doesn't serve them.
How about when you were going to college? Was there a big challenge, a big mayhem, so to speak, about wanting to choose the right college for yourself?
You know, I have to say, it certainly was not the same as today. And part of my personality style is to be very focused on the task and to let those other pieces fall away. So, for instance, I viewed colleges on my own. I had a secondhand car for my senior year in high school, and I got in my car and I drove around to college campuses in the Northeast for 4 days. Visited, interviewed, and then made my decision. And so I wasn't really caught up in what other people were thinking as much as I might have been. I also graduated early from high school, and I think that was an additional piece, that I just sort of had a path and a vision. But I think today, even if you have that path and vision, the media, whether it's the radio, whether it's on the internet, whether it's in newspapers, blogs, e-zines, whatever it happens to be, there's just so much about it, quite frankly.
Well, one of the criteria that people are looking for, places where they can have social fun. Not everyone's looking for that. I'm just saying that that's one of the high priorities in some ways as well. Does that play into?
That's actually not my experience. And that could be because the students that I work with, the students that I coach, come to me because they're unsure as to what the process entails. They want to know that there is a plan and a process, that in six sessions they will go from feeling anxious, confused, and overwhelmed to successful and having their list of colleges to go to. And those students, well, they want an active social life because I really believe college is stepping into young adulthood. So you need an academic environment where you can do well.
Right.
And you also need a social, emotional environment where you'll feel comfortable and able to do your best work. And so, quite honestly, the students I talk to, they want to have a social life. They might want to be near a city. They might want sports or concerts or lectures or that kind of thing. But the students I work with are not looking for party school. But once again, you know, they're a select bunch.
I understand. You have a wonderful layout in your book in terms of all the checklists that someone has to go through, putting their mindset in the right form in terms of helping them out to really get focused on what's important and what's not. Yes. How much of your background has helped you in putting together such a very streamlined approach to addressing this issue?
I think that's a terrific question because it really gets at some of the things that we haven't talked about yet. Not only have I been a teacher, principal, and administrator, so I have experience working with teens, I'm also the graduate of Teachers College, Columbia University, and I have a doctorate in instructional design. So I am accustomed to and have for years now developed curricula. So I know how to plan a program that will meet the needs of students. In addition, of course, I'm a parent of a college graduate. My daughter ended up, coincidentally, quite frankly, going to the same school that I did for very different reasons. She wasn't sure what she wanted to do there, but she liked the environment. So being the parent of a college graduate gives me another piece to this puzzle. And I think lastly, being a coach and coming to the process as a coach, as a partner, a collaborator, someone who asks questions, who offers guidance and support, I think that's a big part of it too.
Very interesting. What are some of the biggest fears students have about college?
Oh, my goodness. When I go to conferences, I run workshops. And, in fact, John, you and I were just talking about it. I'm going to be down in Houston this week speaking at the statewide conference for FBLA, or the Future Business Leaders of America. And I always present on my topic, finding the college that's the right fit for you. And I ask students about their fears because I always want to be in touch with what they're thinking and feeling. And what I hear from students is that they're scared they're not going to get in. And even before that, they're scared they won't find a place that's the right fit for them. And, you know, there are over 4,000 colleges and universities in the United States. So there's no doubt they're going to find a variety of places that will be a good fit for them in terms of their academics and their social emotional wants and needs. So they're worried they won't get in. They're worried they won't find a place that's a good fit. Then they're worried they won't get in. And if they get in, can they afford it? And once they do get in, will they get along with their roommate? I mean, that's one of the biggest questions that we tackle every single time. Like, what do I do if I don't get along with my roommate? And so that's a big concern, and it's understandable because you're stepping onto a college campus, a new life. You're not leaving behind your family and your parents, but you have a different kind of connection with them, and you will be around other people all the time, and you have to make a life.
Very interesting. How about parents? What are their biggest concerns?
I think parents' biggest concerns, and, you know, I'd like to actually answer this question in two ways. I think what parents say in groups, because I run workshops at Clark University for the parents of admitted students. So I've run one set of workshops already. I'll be doing two more sets in the upcoming months. And parents talk about their concerns that their teens aren't ready to step onto a college campus and take care of themselves. Because there's really a difference between being college eligible, which means you've done your assignments in high school, you've completed the application, you've done the testing, you've done the interviewing, you've chosen a college. So you're college eligible, but college ready really means that you know what a bank account is about. You know the difference between a credit card and a debit card. You have good interpersonal skills and refusal skills if you should end up in a situation where you're uncomfortable from substance abuse of one sort or another or just a bad dynamic. So parents are concerned that their teens will be safe and that they're ready to be on a college campus. I think that's a part of it. I think what they're also not saying, and so when we do these workshops and I ask questions of parents, what I ask about is, have you thought through your role in your child's life? And, you know, Johnny, mm-hmm. it's like the question you asked me at the beginning. It's like, well, you know, where have you been? Who are you as a person? What was your childhood like? And what was the rest of your life like? I ask parents to think about their changing role in the lives of their children, which means when children are young, they're caretakers for their children, meaning, you know, 0 to 5, 6, or 7. When children are maybe 8 through 12, as parents, we become more managers of our children's schedules. Mm-hmm. And as our children become teenagers, we become more, I believe, coaches or partners, mm-hmm. supporting them and guiding them, but mm-hmm. not making decisions for them. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the things that parents need to get very clear on their changing role and how it will continue to change quite dramatically, actually, when their teenager goes off to college. So getting clear on their roles and maybe keeping some of their thoughts out of their child or their teen's process. You know, mm-hmm. I talk with parents about their values. What are your values? Mm-hmm. What do you hope for with your teenager? And then once you've gotten clear on that, you need to tuck that away because you need to be there and be the sounding board for your teenager mm-hmm. during your teen's process. And your mm-hmm. teen has to get comfortable with his or her values and what mm-hmm. they want on a campus. And how do you have those conversations? And I think that's the fear of parents, that they're going to have a changing relationship and they don't know what that looks like. Mm-hmm. And so I try and talk with them about that. So I coach parents also.
What I'm hearing is that the parents are actually more concerned about the living skills versus the academic side of the equation.
Yes. Because I think it's much, to use a funny word, certainly not a professional word, but it's more squishy, if you know what I mean. Academics are quite straightforward. You know, you
yeah.
are going to class, you're doing the assignments, you're reaching out to a professor for help, you know how to ask a question, you know, all of those pieces. But the social-emotional piece of, are you going to get out of bed on time? Are you eating well enough? Do you know how to do your laundry? If someone offers you an extra drink and you know you shouldn't have it, how are you going to handle that? And I think that's the concern.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting. Please tell us about the 4 questions one must answer before beginning a college search.
Absolutely. The 4 questions, I believe, are, what do you know about the process? That's the first one. And when I say the process, I mean, what do you know about yourself? What do you know about the college search and selection process, meaning the admissions process and all of those pieces? What do you know about finances and life on college campus? So the piece is, what do you already know? So you feel good about what you know. You have some foundation. And that leads to the second question, which is, what do you have yet to learn about this process? Because no one in the world has every single answer. You're about to take on something new. It is completely appropriate to have lots of questions about it. That's how we learn.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you know for the foundation? What do you have yet to learn? Then what are your worries? Once you've found out all this information, are you worried? Are you concerned? How are you feeling about that? And then lastly, what is your plan? And how are you going to move forward with what you know, what you've learned, what your concerns are, and how you're going to put it all together. And so my program, How to Jumpstart Your College Search, is all about answering those 4 questions because that's the very beginning of the process. And it leads into my 6-session coaching program, which is Making the Grade.
Mm-hmm.
And GRADE stands for Goal Set, Research, Analyze, Decide, and Evaluate. And
mm-hmm.
that's my 6-session program that helps students go from feeling, as I said before, confused and uncertain, anxious and overwhelmed, to really successful in finding the colleges that are the right match.
Sounds like you really focus a lot of effort in knowing yourself as a key element in the college search process, because there are 2 parts of the equation here again. One is the academic side, and then
mm-hmm.
the other side is in terms of, you know, my social living skills, my interaction with people and those kind of things, and that's where the parents comes in and sort of balance the equation, so to speak, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. I think you've really hit the nail on the head with that. And I think it's so wonderful to be able to offer a process that provides guidance and support but is not restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the young men I worked with, when I first met him, he came to me with a list of 21 different schools. And I said, wow, that's a really big list. How did you create that list? And he said, well, you know, I talked to friends of mine and where they were going, and I know my grandfather went to this school, and my dad went to this school, my mom went to this school, and this seems like an interest of mine. And I said, okay, that's a great place to begin. Now that you've got that list, let's focus on you and see if you're really going to be a match for who you are. And this young man whittled down his list from 21 to 8 different schools, and he ended up applying early decision to Clark University. He's the only young man that I have coached, the only person I have ever coached, who I recommended apply to Clark because I thought he was such a great fit. He applied early decision, and he was accepted and received a $30,000 scholarship for every year he was there because he was such a great fit. Because we took the time together to figure out who he was, what he needed, where he was going to do his best work, and that's the key to the process.
Very interesting. So your focus is on the academic side in some ways with the individual itself, because that will put him in a situation where he can succeed and operate at his optimum level.
Yes.
Very interesting.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's the purpose.
What do colleges want from students today?
Colleges are looking for students who have a sense of what they want, and that might mean academically, like they know the program that they're interested in, or it might mean they know the environment in which they'll do well. So they don't expect everybody to be the same, and you don't have to. I think a common misconception among students and parents is that a student needs to do and be everything. So you should belong to 6 or 8 different clubs, and you should be president of the class, and you should do all of these things. And in fact, that's not true. What colleges are really looking for is well-developed young adults who have perhaps engaged in 3 or 4 extracurricular activities throughout high school and done it at increasing levels of depth and responsibility, as opposed to, you know, it's like what comes to mind is the saying, an inch wide, you know, and or a mile wide and an inch deep, actually, which means that, you know, you're spread so thin that you're doing all these different things, but you're not doing any of them with great depth and commitment and passion because you're in so many different places. And what colleges would rather see is someone who has the maturity to understand, you know what, I can't do everything. I have to make decisions about what is best for me, and that's what I'm going to pursue.
You mentioned earlier about using the student's strength because you were measuring their strength, their weaknesses, their like, their dislikes, obviously, in custom tailoring the university or the college that best fits them. How do you use that to thrive in the search in itself? The process in itself, how to use the strength to really narrow it down to a specific college?
You know, I'm really glad you asked me that question because it's so important to me as an educator, as someone with a background in psychology, to focus on what's working, what are a student's strengths. And so even when I went to college, and it's so funny, when I went to Clark University, the last year I was there, I needed one more credit to graduate in 3.5 years. And so I took an independent study and studied Martin Seligman's work. Martin Seligman is a former president of the American Psychological Association, and he studied many aspects of psychology, but most recently, positive psychology. And he has an amazing website that I would recommend to everyone called AuthenticHappiness.com. He also has a book by that name. And so with all of the students that I work with, I suggest that they go to www.AuthenticHappiness.com and take the strength survey. So after about 20 or 25 minutes of answering questions, students are informed through the magic of computer programming of their top 5 strengths. And so I explore those strengths with every student I work with to see, are they leaders? Do they see themselves as leaders? Do they see themselves as people person, having great interpersonal skills? Are they creative? Are they introspective? Are they humble? What are their strengths, and how can they bring those strengths to bear on this process, which even if you can do it with me in 6 sessions, it's still going to take a couple of months with all the testing and the essay writing and everything else. So I want them to feel confident And so I have them rely on their strengths and use them as a lens for looking at what they want. And so if they are strong interpersonally, then maybe they want a school that has lots of social opportunities. If they're strong creatively, they like to create and invent things, then maybe they need a college that will offer them the opportunity to create their own majors, or to study abroad, or to work on research projects with professors, or create their own research projects. So I'm going to use that as a way to help them make the right decision, so that they can feel confident. This is what I think about myself. This is how I see it occurring in my life, and this is what I want as I move on to college.
So in other words, this is what you actually mean by choosing the college that's the right fit for you.
Yes. Absolutely.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Now, one of the things that I gather from just listening to how you kind of go about in really finding the strengths and weaknesses of the candidate, the teens in this case, you really, on a long term, help them to really get pretty much, you know, of course, things in life is very fluid, but the first thing that came to mind is that the saving of time, because there are a number of students that goes to college and says, you know what, here I'm in the middle of my sophomore year or even my junior year, then I realize that, you know, I'm like, I messed up. This is not what I want to do. I need to change my major, so to speak. And so you're talking about not only time and money that you have saved them going in and quite possibly going to the wrong college in this case. And so those are, to me, the intrinsic value of what you have to offer.
I think you're right, and it's interesting you did mention it. I'm working with a young man right now. We've had one session together. We have our next session tomorrow. And one of the things I talked about with his parents was initially, where have you started to look at colleges? And they said, oh, well, we visited a couple of places, and we have a few more that we're thinking of visiting. And I said, how about waiting just a few weeks so that your son and I can start to work together so that we can save you time, energy, and resources. So that you're not looking at places that just might not be a good fit. And so just in conversation with him, I have a sense now of what size school he wants, what region of the country he wants to be in, what his strengths are, his areas of interest. And so I'm going to literally save that family hundreds, if not thousands of dollars in terms of not traveling to places that aren't going to be a good fit.
Very true. And, of course, not to mention the fact that you have narrowed it down to pretty much 80-90% in his case that, hey, this is what I really want to do.
Right, exactly. And that's the beauty of it, because we work in partnership, the teenagers that I work with, because they need to take the reins or they need to lead this process. So while I provide guidance through, you know, my curriculum and the workbooks that they get, they're the ones making the key decisions, and I'm supporting them in that process. And I think that's good, too, because I have worked with teens on occasion who are almost paralyzed with fear about the process. It's not that they can't do it academically at college, but they just don't feel ready to step onto a campus. And so I can help them work through the process of gaining more confidence in themselves, and I can also talk with their parents about giving their teens more responsibility between whatever time that is and when that student's going to be on a college campus.
Interesting. Coming back to the parents' side of the equation, how can parents help support their teens in the search process?
Gosh, that is such a good question. And I think, as I started to discuss before, that parents need to get very clear on their experiences in college, you know, what were they like, and, and what kinds of thoughts and feelings are they bringing with them to their teenager's process. So they need to be clear on their experience, the good, the bad, perhaps the ugly around it, and sort of compartmentalize that and put it away, because that's their experience. I think they need to get very clear on their values and also recognize that some of those values will probably be the same as their teenagers, and yet their teens are going to be living on that campus. So the teenagers have to be comfortable with that. And it's so funny you should mention this. Just the other week at Clark, during one of the parent workshops I ran, there were two very different parents in the workshop. One mom said, you know, my daughter doesn't seem to be at all concerned about the rank of colleges, and I'm very concerned about that, and I don't know how to have a conversation with her about that. And then there was a dad, obviously another family, who said, you know what? I don't care at all about that piece of it. I want my son to be happy, to grow wherever he is. And my son is really concerned about the rankings, and I don't know how to talk with him about that.
Yeah.
And so I thought, how perfect that they're sitting in the same place so we can begin to talk about getting clear on who you are and what you want for your team, and then backing away from that so that your team can make some solid choices. And, you know, for the mom who was very concerned about rankings, I said, mm-hmm. if ranking is really a concern to you, you need to do some reading, because there are books and there are articles about how colleges get their rankings in major media outlets, because it's not what you think. For some of the biggest rankings, colleges are looked at by the number of students that they reject, meaning the percentage of students mm-hmm. that are not selected to go there, the size of the endowments that they have, or what other presidents and other colleges think of that college. And so I'm like, do you want that to be the way you choose a college, what some other president thinks about it? Maybe it's good, but maybe they're pals, and we don't know that. So
right.
I think it's very important to not only look at the rankings, but if you're going to look at the rankings, to number one, know what they mean, but also to recognize that you can't just say, oh, X school, so we'll name Harvard or Yale or Stanford or UMich, whatever school you name, you can't just say, it's a great school, I want to go there, because if you want a particular department or you're interested in several different areas, you need to know about those departments. You can't mm-hmm. just say, oh, it's a great school, I want to go there. You need to know more. I mean, that's why I went to Clark, because it was a non-behaviorally oriented school. It's the only mm-hmm. school in America that Freud spoke at, and while I'm not into psychoanalysis, it was definitely not a behavioral school, and that to me was the ticket. And if I had just said, oh, Clark's a good liberal arts college in Massachusetts, I want to stay on the East Coast, that's good enough for me, and mm-hmm. if I hadn't looked at what kind of psych department it was, I might have made the wrong decision.
Mm-hmm. Very true. And this is the interesting part about it, because too much information can be terrible, and of course too little information could be terrible, and you know,
you're
I mean
absolutely right.
Yeah, because I mean you can get overwhelmed with so much information out there, and it's very difficult for you to decipher all the things that they're giving you. And of course, on the other hand, not having enough information certainly will stymie your thought process in terms of where you want to go. And so when you come in, you help them to really get all these things sorted out into different pieces, because when you talk about going to the specific department on what the child is going to be majoring in, that's critical, because Harvard might be overall the number one school in the world, but mm-hmm. for what their son or their daughter would like to major, Harvard might be number 10.
Right. That's absolutely true. And also the size of school is really important. I know mm-hmm. when my daughter was choosing which college to go to, the final day when we had to put the check in the mail, she was still mm-hmm. choosing between three colleges. One mm-hmm. of them had about 1,200 students. Clark had about 2,500 students. And the other school she was looking at had about 6,000 students. And I said, sweetie, just think about how you want to fit in to that mm-hmm. environment. And quite honestly, if you choose a school in the middle, which happened to be Clark, I said, if you choose a school in the middle, you are likely to be a bigger fish in a smaller pond.
Right.
And I said, is that something that you want? Do you want some of the opportunities that will afford you? Or would you like to be on a campus that has lots more people and more people sort of maybe at your level, and yet maybe you don't have the same opportunities? And so she went with being the bigger fish in the smaller pond, in my opinion, and just had a fabulous experience, worked closely with professors, pulled together a research project and funding from the college campus, and went out and studied the Rosebud Sioux Indians with a professor. I mean, she had amazing opportunities. So you have to look at which campus will afford you the opportunities that you want or that you imagine you might want, because you can't
right.
have everything, but you want to have choices.
That's true, very true. I remember during my process of selecting college, I was coming from Malaysia, but one mm-hmm. of the interesting things that my career guidance counselor in Malacca High School told me, well, I'm very excited the fact that you had the opportunity to go to the United States. Now, when you go there, if you decide to hang out in Chinatown or the Malaysian village, don't go.
uh-huh.
the idea of going there is to learn the culture and not forgetting your own, and combine the two worlds, the two cultures together, and create a third one. And that's the competitive edge that you're looking for. And having heard what he said, it was fascinating, and I've lived my life that way. And what I'm alluding to, Jill, is the fact that you talk about campus, you talk about size, you're talking about the mix and the flavor and everything else. People need to also understand that we're in the global economy right now, and it's important to have that international flavor to exactly what you're doing, because you got to mix and mingle, and that will make you the overall you, so to speak.
I agree completely.
Anyway, coming back to what you were talking about, what are the six biggest lies a teen hears about getting into college?
The six biggest lies, I tell you, it's that it's a long, arduous process that it has to take up all of your junior and your senior year, and you're really just not going to enjoy the last years of high school. And as we can tell from what I've said, I really don't believe that's the case. Mm-hmm. I think it can be more of a streamlined process, and I think it's a good skill to be able to compartmentalize how you focus your energy. You know, what am I doing now? What's my plan? I think it's wonderful for, you know, goal-setting skills, planning, project management skills. So one of the biggest lies they hear is that it's just going to take forever, and, in fact, it doesn't have to. Okay? Another is that you won't be able to find a college that is truly the right fit for you, and we know that, in fact, you're going to find a number of colleges that are the right fit for you. I think a myth and or basically a concern is that you won't find a college that you can afford that is the right fit for you, because that is one of those other pieces, that your life will change so dramatically and that you will leave your family behind and you will step into a new world and you won't have that same kind of connection. The reality is you will still have a connection with your family. You will do it differently, and yet you're always going to be connected. And it's a growing opportunity for everyone. So the lie is that that you're really walking away from all your years at home. And I think that can be a very scary thought. And that's, so that doesn't support students in envisioning, you know, the future that they want in a new and different setting. And perhaps another lie that is common is that it will be a struggle when you get to the new college to manage all the pieces of being a new student on campus. And in fact, colleges do so much these days, so much different than when I went to school. They do so much to support students with pre-college programming before the school even begins for first years. They might have some kind of group experience or multiple group experiences. There are first-year seminars. There are peer advisors. There are professors that run first-year seminars. So they're just all kinds of things to keep you engaged and really in balance with that process. And I think that's one of the biggest concerns also, is that, gosh, when I get there, it's going to be so new, so exciting, and yet how am I going to manage myself? And so the lie is that it is going to be a struggle. And it will be different. It will be challenging. That doesn't mean it's a struggle.
Interesting. What five simple steps one can take to survive the college search process?
Those five simple steps. I think they include getting clear on yourself, and that means your strengths, your challenges, and your needs. So clearly, clarity about yourself, knowledge. Step number two would be knowledge about the process, and that means recognizing what you know and what you have yet to learn, and getting clear on what all the pieces are so you can understand the big picture, what kind of time you need to accomplish and do your best work in that college search, and really make a plan for it. So clarity about yourself, knowledge about the process. I would say another critical step, and this I think ties into a lot of what you talk about a lot of the time, is self-care, taking good care of yourself during this process. There are going to be highs and lows. You need to understand what you need in terms of your sleep and your rest and your social relationships and your boundaries, your own time. So you need to get proactive and develop those skills. Because that'll be another important skill when you step onto a college campus.
Mm-hmm.
So taking good care of self is that third step. Another step, and I don't know if these are actually in numerical order or whether we just need to be thinking about all of these things at mm-hmm. the same time, and that is really giving yourself time to do well. And so that means, you know, when you say, oh, well, I've got to write an essay for the common application, and mm-hmm. it doesn't take me long to write an essay. Maybe I'll write a draft, and then I'll edit it, and two or three mm-hmm. drafts, and I'll be in good shape. When I work with students, they usually do 7 or 8 drafts mm-hmm. of that one essay, and there may be additional essays for other colleges. So to do a good job when you're writing, 8 drafts is going to take you, quite frankly, a number of weeks. Because mm-hmm. you need to be able to write, to walk away from it, to come back to it, and to do better. So to me, time means that you start your college search as early as possible, which, best case scenario, I think is junior year for mm-hmm. most students. That they mm-hmm. should be starting to look in the fall of their junior year, thinking about it, just getting some ideas, and then really digging into it in January, February, and March of their junior year.
Mm-hmm.
And certainly, if you're a student with any kind of special learning needs, or if you are an athlete or an artist or performer of some kind, that's a whole other layer to the process, and it means you also need to start very early
mm-hmm.
so that you can find, you know, the places that are right for you, because you need to audition and take all of those pieces into account also.
Very interesting.
Lastly, that final step in terms of being totally prepared is to, I think, be sure to savor your rituals during the year, meaning enjoy mm-hmm. those family times that you have, those times with friends, and to envision a future.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny, just in response to that particular piece, during my daughter's senior year, I'm kind of creative. That's one of my strengths on Seligman's signature strength survey. And mm-hmm. so I like to make and create things for people. And during my daughter's senior year, I knew that it was going to be a big separation because she's an only child also.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew my husband and I would have, you know, big changes, big transitions to anticipate. And I decided during her senior year that I would quietly on my own just kind of keep a record of some of the major things that happened in her senior year. Things
mm-hmm.
that went well, places she went, people she was in touch with, that kind of thing. And I kept a calendar for the entire year. And then right before she went to college, I handmade a book for her and wrote in all of those events and gave it to her as we left her on the college campus.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me it was, you know what, you are stepping onto a new campus. You have a vision of what you want your new life to be, and yet you do have your family, your background, they're always here with you, and there are memories from your last year at home.
One of the things that you mentioned, which I thought was very interesting, is that besides the academic side of the equation, you talk a lot about mental preparedness for the team. And
yes.
that's something that a lot of times, you know, people fail to see because they take it for granted, so to speak.
Uh-huh. I think they do take it for granted. And what we know about teenagers is that
mm-hmm.
they're young adults, and quite honestly, their brains are still mm-hmm. forming. And I know it sounds kind of funny to say that, right? Like we've stepped mm-hmm. into a biology class. But it's really important. I think sometimes as adults, because we see our teenagers as almost adults, they're bigger, they look a lot like us, you know, in many respects, and most of the time they act a lot like us. In
mm-hmm.
fact, their brains aren't fully formed until their early 20s, and
mm-hmm.
so we can't have exactly the same expectations that we have of ourselves, and so we need to be realistic about that. We need to understand their mental capabilities and their social-emotional piece and support them in that process.
Very interesting. Coming back to what you were talking about, should parents visit college with the teens?
That's a really great and a very personal question. I ask parents and teens to talk about that and what are some of the advantages and disadvantages of visiting together or having the teen visit on his or her own. I mean, I told you my example. I got in my car and I went off on my own, and that's exactly what I wanted to do because that fit my personal style. On the other hand, my daughter always wanted either me or my husband and me or just my husband to go with her because she wanted someone to talk to bounce ideas off of. And so I think that's a really important conversation where the team needs to take the lead in that. And I'm not sure I'd suggest necessarily going with other friends. I mean, you have to prepare for that visit. And that's a big part of my coaching program. It's that research and analysis phase where they start to come together, which is, okay, which colleges have you identified? What are the 8 to 10 on your list? Mm-hmm. And what are you going to look for while you're there? Because you go not just to sort of soak it all in, although that is a piece of it. You want to see what it looks and feels like and your sense of being there. And then you're also, I believe, you're being a detective while you're there. You're mm-hmm. going on the tour and listening to probably one of the most personable people you've ever met, because those are the tour guides. They're wonderful, and that's their job. You're going to go to the information session and listen to what that person has to say, but you need to find, whether you go by yourself or with your parents as a team, you need to find the time to walk around the campus on your own, to visit the residence hall, to sit in on a class if it's possible. And in many places, colleges will arrange that for you, to eat some of the food there. And I know that sounds funny, although it probably doesn't sound funny to you, but it certainly sounds funny to a lot of people. I'm like, but you're going to be here for probably 4 years. Do you like the food or not? Because some places have great food and, quite frankly, some places don't. Mm-hmm. And so how are you going to manage that piece? You know, is there a kitchen in the residence hall? Can you live in an apartment off campus and make your own food? And what year can you do that in? Probably not your first year, maybe your second, more likely your third or fourth year. So I ask teenagers when they go to campus, whether it's with their parents or on their own, to go with a list that we've created together as to what's important to them. Like if they want to be a journalist, you're going to want to look at the school newspaper, the e-zine, the blogs that are there. You're going to want to check out all these possibilities because you want a true sense of what that school is like. And in addition, if you go with a list of what to look at, and you're good about bringing multiple lists, because you usually look at a couple colleges at the same time to take a road trip, you need to take notes on each and every place while you're there or immediately afterwards, because after a while, these things start to get muddled in your mind, you know, mm-hmm. because time passes and there are similarities and differences. And so I approach this whole topic of college visits with a lot of questions and opportunities for discussion.
Have you found some of your clients that upon visiting a college that changes their mind because it's not quite what they thought it was going
to
be?
Oh, my gosh, completely. Absolutely, Johnny. Mm-hmm. I can remember one young man saying to me, oh, yeah, I was going up to look at this school, which will remain unnamed. But I went up to look at the school, and I thought I was going to want to go there because it's the right distance from home. It's about 2 hours away, and I got on the campus, and I hated it because I don't like modern architecture, and it was awful. Mm. And I was like, you know what? I hear you completely. I get that. You know? People have a vision, and not everyone, but often students will have a vision of they want lots of trees or they want an urban setting or any number of things. And I think that's the piece. You need to go and get on those campuses, and you need to do it before you apply to college, if at all possible. And it's not always possible. Maybe you're on the East Coast or you're in the South and you want some school up in the Northwest. And it may not be possible to get there, but then you really need to do your homework online and look at the campus. And you need to go to some of the websites like Unigo, www.unigo.com. That's a website that really features students' opinions about the colleges that they're currently attending. I'm also an expert on that website. And so I think you need to do your homework, because I would not want the student I'm coaching, if at all possible, to apply to a school that they hadn't visited, because they may be paying $50, $60, or $75 for an application. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to spend that money unless you know there's a real good chance you want to go there.
Very interesting. How much of a financial situation comes into play when making the final decision?
Boy, that's a good question. And, you know, before we get to talking about the final decision, at the beginning, what often happens is parents will say, well, you know, we have a fixed amount of money that we can spend for our teenager to go to college. And so I'm thinking that, you know, and this is a parent talking to me, I'm thinking that we won't have our teenager look at any of the small private liberal arts colleges because they're too expensive. And my response in return is, you know what, at the beginning, you look very broadly. at different places, because quite honestly, the small private liberal arts colleges give more money in general than the state schools. So it might work out. Remember, I was talking about that young man I worked with who ended up with a $30,000 a year scholarship.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
That brought the school down to a state school price tag. And so at the beginning of the process, I think you look broadly. And then when you get the acceptances, you start to look at what kind of financial package you received, what kinds of scholarships might still be available, because that's also a process you need to start early on, like in junior year, easily. And then you see what funds are available and what the schools can do for you. And then it's a conversation that a teen has to have with his or her parents around, well, what can we afford? And maybe there's work study, or maybe there's some part-time work opportunities. And I have to say, the research on teens working in college is that part-time work usually doesn't interfere with doing their academics and the social piece. Not that it doesn't take up time, don't get me wrong, but it's not, it's not a big impediment, but full-time work gets in the way of students really being able to do their best work in college. And so that's really a consideration. And so I think it's important to look not only at different sizes of colleges, but also different price tags of colleges.
Interesting. Let us talk about the different terminologies. I know you discuss about liberal arts colleges, universities, and special needs and so forth. Let's go through down the list that that you can tell us, you know, what these various institutions stands for and what are they good for.
Certainly. Well, if we're talking about community or junior colleges, they often offer a degree after the completion of 2 years of full-time study. Now, it's different in some states. You know, community colleges in the East tend to be a little different than community colleges in the West. But in general, community colleges or junior colleges are two-year programs. And they also, so they offer a liberal arts education for 2 years, and someone would receive an associate's degree upon graduating from such a setting. And they may also offer some technical programs that prepare students for entry into the world of work after 2 years of education. And so that would be different from, for instance, a specialized technical or agricultural school that focuses on preparation for a specific career. So that might be business, health science, music, the seminary, rabbinical school, or teaching. So you might have some specialized schools, and they might be either two-year or four-year. In the four-year category, there's also liberal arts colleges, and they tend to focus on undergraduate students. So that's, you know, the first 4 years of college, not graduate degrees such as a master's or doctorate. And they offer a wide selection of courses in the humanities, the social sciences, and the sciences. And class sizes generally smaller, and personal attention is more available in these liberal arts colleges in general because they are smaller places than universities or state schools, which are bigger than colleges. They are undergraduate and graduate in terms of the degrees that are offered. So you could get a bachelor's and maybe go on to a master's or a doctorate at the same school. Not always, but sometimes. They offer more majors at universities usually than at colleges. They often have research facilities and opportunities, and class size is sometimes larger. Now, there are all kinds of caveats to what I'm saying. For instance, NYU, New York University, is a very large university, but it has many small colleges within the university. So you can apply to a specific college. So that's important to know. And so it's important to really look at how is a college or university constructed, so to speak, meaning what are the elements of it? What types of majors do they offer? How big are the classes? Who teaches the classes? In some institutions, particularly large ones, sometimes there'll be graduate assistants, meaning graduate students who are teaching the courses. And I think that's something a teenager and a parent need to be thinking and talking about. If your teen is going to a college because you expect the professors to be teaching the courses, then you need to make sure that that's happening, because it's not always the case. And that's not to say that grad assistants can't be great teachers. Don't get me wrong. But if that's not what they're going into, you can't be sure. And so I think that's important. And that's also, it's related to something that we touched on before. When you're looking at a campus, you want to look at how the professors are actually teaching. And I know that sounds almost funny to say, because you're like, that's what a college or university is. That's what professors do. They teach. But in fact, teaching is a very small part of what professors do on college and university campuses in most places. They do a lot of research. They do a lot of writing. And so you want to be sure that when you're looking at a college campus, you see what the classes are like. How big are they? What's the style of teaching? Is it interactive and that's what you want? Or is it more lecture-oriented and that's your learning style? So really understanding your own learning style is important to figuring out which one of these types of colleges is going to be the best fit for you.
Wonderful. Where can someone go to buy your ebook and get more information about you and keep up with your latest happenings?
Well, they can certainly visit my website, which is www.majorinyou.com. So that's MAJORINYOU.com. And my ebook is on the store page. That's How to Jumpstart Your College Search. And in fact, tonight I have a free preview call for a teleclass. So I've taken my ebook and made it into a 4-session teleclass that will start on March 14th. So if anyone's interested, they could always send me an email, jill@majorinyou.com, and I could email them the call-in information for tonight's free preview call, or they could always get an MP3 file because I'll have that available to people that can't make the call tonight. So there's information on my site about my ebook, about my coaching program, speaking that I do, all that kind of stuff. Thank you for asking.
You're welcome. What advice do you have for parents who don't know how or when to begin the search process?
I would suggest that they locate some resources, whether it's online by maybe going to www.collegeboard.com, because that's a site with a wealth of information about the search process, and it has information for teens and also some good information for parents. There are lots of books in the library. There are books in the bookstore. There are magazines. There are websites like mine and others that will help parents just get a sense of what's the big picture of all the things that need to be considered and when do we really need to start this process. So it doesn't take over our family's life. I mean, one of the couples in one of the workshops that I did the other week said, you know what, we found that we were talking with our son about the college search almost every single day, and it just overwhelmed us. So we decided that in our family, we would choose Wednesday night to check in on the process. And it made it just so much more manageable and bearable for all of us.
Very
true. Think that's the key to what you're saying, Johnny, is that not only do you need to understand what all the pieces are, but you have to have a plan for engaging in the process.
Very true. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with all our listeners this morning?
I do. I have a recipe, and I'm going to share it with you. It has many ingredients. I have about a dozen different ingredients here, and it's really related to some work I did in terms of writing my mission. And so my recipe includes to love, learn, and laugh each day, grow myself, my mind, heart, and soul, seize opportunities and challenges, support others in their growth, their work and play, give to others my time, energy, and resources, fail forward and learn from my mistakes, deepen my connections with my family and friends, explore my artistic abilities, pursue academic excellence and abilities, expand my world, read, meet new people, and exercise every day, make every day a gem, multifaceted. Greet the day and its inhabitants with joy. Consciously choose how I spend my precious time. Create time to be with important others. Do more than the routines of life. And support myself, family, friends, and community through taking care of each. That's my recipe.
That's fantastic. Wonderful.
Thank you.
Very, very thorough, and you get right to the point as well. So that's fantastic. What advice do you have for teens who are having problems in getting started as they face all kinds of obstacles in terms of thinking about, like, when should I get started or what should I look for first and so forth? What advice do you have for teens?
What advice I have for teens is take that first step. And by that I mean don't beat yourself up about what month it is or what you haven't done. Recognize that every day, meaning every minute, is the opportunity to start. And so start with small steps, see what's comfortable for you. Reach out to people for help if that's your style. If it's not, find resources in the library, in bookstores, online, because there are so many people that want to help you. There are so many resources that you need to make that first step to ask the question, to learn what it's about, because that's going to help you feel more in control of the process. The more you worry about it and don't step into it, the bigger it becomes. The more you can just take a small bite of what that process is, the more you realize it's just one step after another. I liken this, and I've talked with people about this because I do marathons and half marathons. I raise money for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. So I think about marathons and walking and running and race walking all the time. And to me, this process can seem like a marathon. And to me, that's a great thing because it's fun. You train for it. You prepare. If you have a setback, you get past it. Some people I talk to are like, no, that doesn't sound like a great metaphor. So a marathon seems like a long time. But the reality is it is a long process. And yet there's so many people along the way that will help you. So open up to the possibility of seeking help from others because we're there. We want to help.
Fantastic. Jill, thank you for the great recipe for living you had shared with us earlier and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be veteran actor Rick Lance. His new memoir titled North of Hollywood offers deep insights into his life as an actor, husband, and father. Rick and I will be discussing about his life's journey along with plenty of showbiz anecdotes. For additional information about this show, future shows, and to receive a free recipe for living, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening and have a great week. Jill, thank you again and have a great day.
Thank you. You too, Johnny.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.